Airport. We are gathered together in the departure lounge. We sit with suboptimal posture. We drink lukewarm water and watery coffee. Our fingers insist on distraction. If there is a method for eating a mediocre croissant without dusting one's fingers and clothes with its crumbs, we don't know it. We aren't hungry, but restless and bored, or we haven't been sated in months, maybe more. The young man, 20-something, slim, his head covered, has the most suboptimal posture of all. He could feel our eyes grazing his face like a breeze, just as light and as silent, but violent somehow. And so slouched in his chair, which is shaped like a bucket like ours, with his shoulders to guard him. Now he looks frightened, where before he looked lonesome, but even looking frightened, he frightens us. His fingers, insistent on distraction like ours, are pulling at each other as if wiping something off. First, the fingers of the left enclose the fingers of the right, pull and twist, then the other way around. The gesture is soundless but cries out in anguish, a language that none of us here understands. Perhaps not. Perhaps she does. The woman in her 80s. The woman by the window in maudlin gray light. She appears to be made from that light. Sadness, grayness, as blurred as the fog that has grounded our plane, as old as the wars that have slashed up the ground and is covered in crumbs, thin and golden. She seems to have seen things. This is what they say, someone who has seen things. The things never change. The things are loss, senseless and endless, and death, the most merciful form of erasure. The wealthy couple, ensuring that we know of its wealth, asks the desk attendant loudly where to find the nearest club. Club, he pronounces the word. It is sumptuous. We have never before noticed the sumptuousness of the word. Cl. That is a sensuous sound. Climax, clitoris, ub, rub, tub. We are thinking of climaxes and rubs as we watch her. She is dressed like the wife of a fat, wealthy man, or rather, the mistress. White jeans and stilettos, a crocodile handbag, and light-catching rings. These rings throw off prisms, little rainbows as she gestures, such that she appears to be a superhero of some modest sort. The fat man holds the mistress by the sparkly belted waist as if to steady her in case she falls, a risk with the heels. There are no VIP clubs in this airport, says the attendant. And here she looks smug as she gestures to us. There is no place to wait but right here with the rest in a bucket-shaped seat. She is sorry. Scoffing and gesturing and scattering rainbows, the mistress objects to this, looking around. Where will they sit? There are two seats available. They are next to the 20-something, bowing his head. She looks at the fat man, who looks at the 20-something, tightening his grip on her gem-crusted belt. We can scarcely condemn them. We left those chairs empty. We did this unthinkingly, a buffer of sorts. None of us wishes to sit quite so close to the man with his head covered, lonesome or no. In a language that all of us do understand, the covered head tells us, be careful, steer clear. The covered head tells us that something is hidden, that something is lurking beneath, out of sight. None of us considers that this something is heartbreak, or shyness, or longing, or boredom, or hurt. We grant him all manner of power of darkness, but not the opaqueness of selfhood. We deny him the personal. We have our longings, our carpeted hallways and keys in a bowl, and our tedious day jobs and floppy soft slippers and favorite pornography sites on the web. But we can't quite imagine that he does. Not really. We cannot imagine a home or a dog or a secret obsession with Korean pop music or anything else that a person can love. His fingers moving constantly arouse our suspicion. Interesting that suspicion can be said to be aroused. And accurate. Physiologically, suspicion or fear and arousal or pleasure are one and the same. The adrenaline that courses through our bodies when we're excited is the very same that courses through our bodies when we're scared. The 20-something arouses us, watching his fingers, wondering what lurks beneath, what can't be seen. We are looking, we are watching, our eyes grace his cheeks, but we cannot, or do not, or know not to see. None of us asks himself, who is this person? The word does not cross our minds, person, only man. And man, in the abstract, as maleness, masculinity, man, not as human, but man, as intent. He is maleness, masculinity, embodied intention. Intention to what? We don't know, but can guess, or can't guess. He is hidden, impenetrable to knowing. And this is important for the buffer to stand. We can't guess, but we know, have been told in hushed whispers and calm admonition again and again. The more frenzied philippics we've taken more lightly. We are reasonable people, but we know what they say. There is a reason for stereotypes. There are violent among them. Any reasonable person must acknowledge this fact. Were we to discover in this moment, as we will some months later, that the fat man is a thief, still we'd choose the same chair. The fat man has stolen great sums, astronomical, banging on keyboards and blotting out wealth. He has blotted out lives in the space of a morning, but still we don't see him as wanting. We can't. The fat man, well-groomed in the suit, with the mistress, can only be someone who has, we believe. The man with his head covered, someone who hasn't. The fat man steals, the thin man wants. So we know his intention. We can't see his face, but we know what he wants, that he wants, that he lacks. This is a meaning of want, to have need of. A man such as this always wants, so must take. He lacks our compassion, our empathy, our interest, those soft-sounding words that we hear on the news, but he wants something else we believe we are cautioned, something we have, though we don't quite know what. We have nothing to give but our crumbs and our pennies. Were he younger, we'd give our old clothes wrapped as trash. We prefer the dark young, under 4 years old, ideally, all wide-eyed and gap-toothed and grateful and small. But we think, nonetheless, that he's plotting to take and so hold our bags closer, aroused by the thought. Empty as sockets where once there were eyeballs, a symptom of blindness, those two empty chairs. We can scarcely condemn the fat, wealthy man's mistress for stating as fact, as she does now, aghast, the five words slipping out before manners can stop them, a child in the road, but there's nowhere to sit. Not so loud, but we hear it. The desk attendant hears it. She adjusts her little scarf, clears her throat, doesn't speak. The little girl, heretofore sleeping on her mother or pretending to sleep, blinking, sucking her thumb, with her head on a pillow of two folded cardigans, one pink angora, the other blue wool, this little girl opens her eyes and stops blinking, her head in the cup of her mother's plush lap, And she looks at the mistress as girls look at women who aren't their own mothers, gaze forthright, eyes clear, and says, "You go here." Lifts her head from the cardigans. The mother objects without words and with hands. She strokes the girl's hair, laughing softly while stroking. The girl is undaunted and stands to her feet. She takes the hand stroking and laughs too while tugging. "Go," she says. "They come here, we go there." Then, to our horror, she crosses the linoleum. We have never before noticed the sound of small feet, the soft tap, tap, tap that they make with each footfall, a music in silence, a slash through a heart. She marches to the chair by the man, wriggles into it. Shaped like a bucket, it holds her once in. The mother stands too, with no choice but to follow the daughter, embarrassed, though not yet sure why. She gathers up the cardigans and napkins and carrot sticks, the carry-on luggage on wheels, the croissants. The girl swings her feet with such guileless contentment that all of us look at our hands, all but one. The woman in her 80s is looking out the window and nodding while humming, a low, quiet hum, the sound that means yes, in the language we weep with, the sound that means things never change. But this too, there is this. There are children and fog out the window, erasures and sockets where eyes used to be. The end goal of violence is what? Annihilation. To end an existence, erase it from being. We can erase a life simply, in fact, without effort. Stare but don't see, and there's no human being. The wealthy couple sits in the two chairs now vacant. They raise to their faces their large backlit phones, a form of armor. The desk attendant ties her scarf, sighing. An announcement on the speakers at a nearby gate blares. The 20-something man, with his shoulders to guard him, uncurls at the touch of the little girl's hand. His fingers stop. Briefly, our breathing stops also. "I'm tired," she tells him. He tells her, "I know." My question to you, audience, is when you hear about the man with his head covered, who do you see? Thank you.